Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
I remember getting on the plane on the way home and seeing the manager sprawled out on the chair. Look, dishevelled. Big club, this, isn't it? That's what he said to me. And I thought, ooh. I think he's got to look at who's around him. The reason I left to go to Leeds was because it was out of London and the external people around me I needed to get away from.
We'd have been the greatest team of all time if we'd beaten Barcelona in them two games.
Messi didn't even really have a massive plan for him.
Should have done.
I felt sorry for David Moyes. I think anyone who come in there is an impossible job. After Klopp now.
Yeah.
He's at Newcastle, end of his career, coming in at half-time and he just shouted, he'll give us one.
Yeah.
Rio will give us one. I remember hearing you two in the shower going, that's a point game there. Where are those people that the newcomers are looking to get those little nuggets? They're not there at the
moment. Mentioning them two in the shower and then little nuggets.
Rio, thank you for coming. You're looking cool, Rio. It's nice. Very impressive.
You're looking cool, though. you're in
a corduroy jacket.
Corduroy kids.
What are these trousers? They're nice.
What do you think about this Burberry hoodie?
They're nice.
The best item of clothing in the world. No, they represent 247 pant. Yeah. Everyone must have a pair.
What?
You got a pair?
What?
Is that the 247
pant? 247
pant.
Making them look quite good.
Honestly, it's unbelievable. It's the best pant in the world.
You should never wear trousers that have got pockets on the outs. You know that?
Yeah.
That's a no.
Yeah, you wear that for walking the dogs. You put your poo bags in. You know what I mean?
Your poo bags. Hey, what do you think of what's the name? The manager the other day, shoving the manager.
I know.
Yeah.
Wow, this is it, you see.
Was that over? They had a bit of beef, didn't they?
No, righties, mate. Hey, he's not the cameras, righties, mate.
What did you say on that, Joe?
I do think because it was... last minute of the game, because they were trying to use... They said, should we use a multi-ball system or a one-ball system? And at the end, with 1 minute ago, she's asking for a ball to be thrown on. So Jonas is like, you said... And it's like last minute of the game. And then Aaron Cuthbert said something to him. But he is very loud on the side of the pitch and can get... I think he's calmed down this season. But I just don't think she should have used the male, because she was like, it's male aggression.
What about the shoving?
That's what I mean.
So she shoved him, though.
Yeah, but then she was seeing him on the side of the pitch. But I didn't think she had to see a male.
What if he shoved her?
Exactly.
Problems. You know the problem. You know the, when you look at when you look at it, right? When you look at the actual clips.
Yeah, Sirius has gone.
Yeah.
When you're talking about
this one goes out, you know. What are you saying?
When you talk about the clips, when you look at the clips, to use those words like male aggression. Look at Chris. Now, I don't know what was said with Aaron Cuthbert when she went over to him, but if he said anything, I don't know. But if we're talking about, she totally negated everything by pushing him.
Yeah.
Mm. Afterwards, then not only, you know, listen, she doesn't lose. She's not used to losing, you know what I mean? So last season, she lost now twice in that competition to Arsenal. But I thought that she would have went in the dressing room and thought, you know something, yeah, I'm out of order. She went in and doubled down on it and came out and said that. And so it's really tough. And I was like, gosh, I can totally understand how she's feeling. She's not used to losing. But to come out of that, that could have finished him.
Yeah.
If we don't see those clips and we could see that, can finish him.
Yeah, the clips kind of told a bit of a.
It told a story, but we don't know what was said. This is the one thing. You know, I'm going to find out if he said something maybe aggressive. But
I don't know if it's been building up because I think of how he is on the side. I know a few managers have done post-match interviews saying that the way he's
Gareth Taylor,
the fourth official and stuff like that. But I don't know. Yeah. I've never been used to having a manager that is like that. Like I always liked when I played. I don't know about you guys, but like our manager would just sit there calm because he was like, our work's been done, just go out and do what you got. I didn't like to see the manager like because I thought
Once he picked Jill, I'm not even joking. Once he picked me, I didn't care about him.
Yeah.
I'm not even joking. I don't like even when he's talking to you, know when you go over, you might drink water and he's talking. I can't hear him.
Yeah.
I'm not listening.
Yeah.
I'm not listening to what he's saying. I'm not bothered about what the manager's doing on the side, but like when you look at Jonas sometimes, he's very animated.
He's very animated.
I feel like he's played right back.
He's calmed down. He's calmed down. He's calmed down. He has calmed down. And it's very hard. Because Gareth Taylor, again, using that, those words, bullying.
Yeah.
He's using those words in the women's game. Bullying. Now she's saying malaggression. Yeah. It's not good.
No, you're right.
It's
the word.
Rio, we've got some Nando's coming.
You still looking after yourself?
Yeah. I haven't this month, though. Right. I'm training for soccer, Rio, Dana.
Oh, yeah. Foolishness.
Oh,
I think you should come and support the cause.
You played in that.
I used to.
I'm not playing anymore. Every time an ex-player gets a shocking injury, like a cruciate or a rip their Achilles or something, you're only trying to chase people who are fit.
Yeah.
Do you know where the Brazilian lad who Fabio Aurelio come back to play for Liverpool legend, supposed to go back the day after or whatever, he's still here now.
What's he done?
He broke all his ribs.
Honestly.
Oh, in one of them games?
I've stopped playing now.
No.
I'm trying to sell it to him.
He scored a great goal. I read about it this morning.
Basso scored
you won it yet?
Have you won it?
I've only done one.
No, I lost all three.
But we need to win this.
Lost all three.
We need to win. We've lost six in a row, that's why.
We were centre half at me twice together. I think we were 0-0 at half time and we were doing all right. But then what happens? You change the goalkeeper to celebrity goalkeeper.
Second
half.
We've got the fella. Who's the fella who just
comedian?
No.
Jamie.
What's the mask thing?
Oh God, Dummett.
The Masked Singer. Who's the host of that?
Yeah, Joe Dummett.
Was that him?
Yeah.
Is he
was
shit?
It? Honestly.
It wasn't even like a save. It was through his foot.
No, no.
And he tried to kick it and he just completely missed it. He just smiled.
And smiled like, hey, look, I present Masked Singer.
I get dead into it. Like, it's when I sat in the meeting and they're like, you'll be Mark and Roberto Carlos and Totti today. I'm like, when do you ever get that sentence? Totti was still pinging it around. Do you want to play?
I love Totti.
No. We need a strong team.
No, I can't. No. I won't be part of a strong team.
Have you ever played?
No, I can't.
Tree at the back. Hey,
we concede too many.
Is your body like knackered after?
Have you seen his body? Is he training?
No, but I mean injuries.
Take your jacket off.
You've been in the gym, look.
No.
Every morning on Instagram.
Not every morning.
Pumping.
No, is that right?
Three times a week.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Who's filming it? Who's the person who's got? Who's like who's
the who trains me?
Yeah,
yeah. Just go bang it out, boom.
Yeah.
He wants you on Instagram, doesn't he?
Lovely.
I bet.
Is that it, Ree? Is that where you're going now? You're going to be doing that for as long as?
Yeah, I can't run because I've got a bad back. So remember
the. Yeah, I've got the Preston manager on the phone. Yeah,
right, it's terrible.
Maybe he thinks you're on the job.
Huh? Right, you okay, lad?
What's up,
Preston manager?
Is that
all good? Just with the overlap. Do you want to go on loudspeaker with the overlap crew here, or is it pretty? Or is it serious or important?
Oh, what's he doing? Who's
needs an investor.
The Nevilles and the Keens who want to sign me. Let's get him on loudspeaker.
Is that
right? You're on now, so you've got Jill Scott, Rio Ferdinand's coming in as the special guest, probably getting a few quid, cash in hand.
We're talking about it after, guys.
Right, see, Gary, what is it? Or can't you talk now?
Well, I was going to give Gary loads, but I'll leave it until another time.
Are you all right, Ryan?
It was only Jake. How are you guys? You okay?
Yeah, good, thanks.
You've had a chat before, haven't you?
Yeah, he turned me down.
Yeah, we've had a few, yeah.
A few years ago.
I penciled you in for the friendly next season, guys.
Good.
The game with me, yeah?
Yeah, good.
Why did you turn them down? Was it the money, Ryan, or the interference, or the TV show?
I had to wait to see how you got on well with him first. I couldn't be the only scouser working for him.
Yeah, exactly. Go ahead, what is it?
Do you know the place you had for James's birthday?
Yeah.
Have you got the fella's number to tell
me? Are you an agent?
Yeah, sound lad, yeah. Just give him a bit of cash, he'd be sound. I'll send you the number over to finish here.
Right, see you
there. Right, let's start. Don't we normally have jellies and sweets and...
Yeah.
We've got some Nando's coming.
Oh.
Have we?
I wasn't going to start it, but actually, you just said United have had over 100 shots in the last three games.
Yeah.
Right.
What?
Yeah.
Against them?
Yeah. Against them, yeah.
Yeah. Mate, I think 83 or something like that entries into the box against Brentford.
Yeah. You used to get more than that when you were in the back.
You know what? That is, as much as like, we're laughing,
you think that's impressive?
That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Sorry. Your centre back on Sunday for United at Old Trafford, you're going out onto that pitch with the other players, so you're taking Lindelof's place. Mm. What are you doing in the next 3 days to make sure that United only have a few shots on the goal against Liverpool?
Fucking praying.
Tough question.
It's a tough question. No, I'm saying you're experienced centre-back, you're the captain of the team.
I think
you've seen them do that every week now for about 6 months. What are you doing?
I look at when I first come to United, I understood what that game immediately. Like for Muse, I was asking questions about like, I'm here in Liverpool's a massive, massive game. So I start asking questions. I'll be trying to get into the players what this game means to the people, to us as players, to try and charge people up to get them. So the motivation seems to be there. I think this team has been questioned about motivation, application, like the work ethic, body language. Like in that game, it's like that's illegal to be thrown at you in them type of games. So just that as a starting point will be where I began. I think tactics and that will be the manager sorts all that shit out. But I think I'd be looking at the enormity of this game. You need to understand what this means. You can't walk down the street after this game, you get beat or you get embarrassed. And we got embarrassed at times.
But that midfield in front of you, what I'm saying is that midfield that, to be fair, is quite empty.
Yeah, discipline. I need people in front. I'll be saying that as a centre-back, listen, I need some protection in front of so they don't just seamlessly come through and get to us without any resistance. That's what it seems like in a minute.
Yeah.
Transitions in games.
Do you think that starts with the players or the manager, though?
But I think it's
happens,
a bit of both.
It happens every game.
Every game. So every game of teams.
I look at Man United and I know Ten Hag had a little pop at me a couple of months ago, which is fine, but it hasn't changed when I watched that Brentford game. It's like it's two separate teams in one. So you've got just like the front five almost trying to press and everyone's... There's just this massive space. Surely, I just think if you're... any competent coach would you'd look at that and go, OK, we're either all up there or we're all back here. It's not, I don't think it's that difficult.
But surely as a player, you should recognise as a midfielder, oh, they're getting in a few times, I need to offer a bit more protection as a midfielder.
Leaders. You need leaders to be talking like that and pulling people about in the games and saying, sit. How many times people would turn around or you'd say to someone, listen, the next 5 minutes, just sit and stay tight, be hard to play against. But I think emotion comes into this team a lot. They're quite emotional players. They've just gone gung-ho at times and just lose
Fernandes
that.
Does that a lot.
Yeah, and they lose that kind of... There's no rigidness to the team.
But we keep expecting to change, don't we? I think it'll be the same on Sunday.
But that's the point, if it doesn't change...
strange.
I can see that in a one-off game where someone's lost their head or they get a bit excited and they're running all over the place. But it happens that often, the same thing, that surely...
Every week.
The manager must accept it to a certain point and say, well, OK... There's something in it that he likes. I can't quite work out because it's not like Pep or Klopp, and we're talking about overload midfield and transitions and people moving here and really complicated. We're talking about something that we'd expect from the teams coming up.
Do you think the players are still good enough to play that open way like they did in the cup?
I think it's more defending, Roy, than when you say open up. I think we always associate with the ball, don't we? Okay, we're on the ball, we're all flying forward. But this is Man United without the ball. Mm. And the most obvious thing for any team at any level of football is to get compact.
When you watch the game, especially at home, obviously the fans are behind them. They start the game, and you're like, what game was it? They started and they scored early and everything, and they still pushing men forward, the front men, but the midfield, they weren't man to man on them. So if they did win it up there, they were too far off of the midfield. So they broke the first press, straight into the midfield, and then it was Fulham. Mm. It was when I watched against Fulham. A Wobi turned straight into the back. And you think to yourself, how can that be easy?
You look at Kobbie Mainoo as well, who's everyone's raving about him, and rightly so, he's been magnificent since he's come into the team. But I don't see anyone trying to protect him. He's a kid. Imagine a young kid coming into one of our teams. You try and protect that kid. There's only probably the odd one, like maybe a Rooney, you don't have to protect. But in the main, you like, let's make sure there's bodies around. Don't leave him exposed. How many games you see him get left exposed? And you think, for a young kid, he shouldn't be... Imagine that feeling, being exposed in that midfield. It's a lonely place in there, if it's big spaces. Yeah. So they're the things that I think that there's got to be older players, leaders in that team, or the coaches that go, listen, you make sure you tighten it up in that area, especially for the game at the weekend. But the point you made before about, or was it you, James, about there's no fear, maybe, or from the manager's point of view, and from the players looking up. I remember when I come to United, I mean, I used to laugh and giggle a little bit when I used to hear like Giggsy or Bex go, oh, I'm on that side of the pitch, or you even, I'm on that side of the pitch. I said, what are you talking about? The manager's side, I'm on his side. You don't shut up. He's on me all game. And then the odd time where it rolls under your foot and goes out, just for lack of conversation.
What was the odd time, that?
He would roast you. I used to think, these are like, they've won 5-6 Premier Leagues, Champions League, etc. Successful fellas, experience, and they're like shitting themselves a little bit about having to walk in at half-time after being on that side of the pitch. But I don't sense that fear, or a little bit of fear, maybe even respect, maybe, for the manager at the moment. Not respect, probably strong, but the fear factor to say, I need to put in certain elements that are non-negotiables, the fundamentals of being a footballer, work hard, body language, etc. That don't seem to happen for me.
Do you think there's, like, an element of panic at the minute? Because I remember the Brentford game, was it Martinez come on, and he just, outside of the foot, just whacked the ball at Harry Maguire, and I was like, why are you doing that in that moment? It was, like, a bit of build-up play. And I feel like when I watch Maguire for United versus England, when he's with Stones, he looks a lot more calm, sure, I think, yeah, sometimes. And as a centre-half, did that play a big difference, who you were playing alongside?
Yeah, I think you definitely get comfort in, like, the familiarity with a player, always seeing the same person by his side. And they've played together for quite a long time, haven't they, Stones and Maguire? Yeah. But I just think the environment in England's different. It's a more stable, calm environment that they've all kind of bought into. The environment at United is still like, they don't know where it's going, they don't know what direction they're going.
So. And I think it's a coincidence.
It's not a team, does it?
That Nando's going to get cold, isn't it?
I don't think it's a coincidence that Kobbie Mainoo is man of the match in that game with people around him, because he's obviously got people talking to him.
Yeah.
Who was that, sorry?
Kobbie Mainoo. Yeah. Man of the match for the England game.
He was. Declan Rice, I could hear him.
Next to him, and then behind him.
Rio, you mentioned body language, and I've thought about this a lot in the last few days, and it was the topic of conversation after the game on Saturday night, after the Brentford game. Marcus Rashford, I don't know how to say this, but to me, there's something not right. He's not right. And it's not just a case of he's not playing football well. He doesn't look happy. And I'm looking at him thinking, actually, I'm worried about him. And I don't know whether when you watch him, you know, you watch a player and you think, actually, there's something there. You know, we know there's obviously been a couple of incidents this season. We know he's coming under a bit of pressure. His form's bad. We know that. But I look at him and I think, that's not right. I genuinely would worry about him at this moment in time, because it's not a lad that's grown up with the spirit and freedom of playing for United as a kid. That is something who's... Do you feel the same way, that you have that sense of worry about him rather than thinking, well, why is he not doing this or why is he not doing that? I've gone past that, me, now. I feel like genuinely a different place.
I think it's a pivotal moment in his career now. I think he's not a kid anymore, do you know what I mean? I think a lot of people look at our potential talent and 26. What was you doing at 26? Do you know what I mean? But we're all still making mistakes, don't get me wrong, but on the football pitch, you kind of had it locked down. You knew what you were doing, you knew what you were about, you knew who you were, type thing. But I think there's a big decision to make with him. From him, I think he's got to look at who's around him. I know his family play a big part with him, which is great. But then who are the external people around that? Are they the right people? Are they enabling him to make excuses for himself behind closed doors? Or are they saying, listen, look at yourself and be accountable for what you're doing and what you are at the moment? How are we going to get through this? Or is it just an excuse environment he's in? He needs to look at that and own that, and I think make big decisions. I think that even when I left Leeds, it's different, but I left Leeds, I could have gone to Chelsea, and it's probably a club that I probably preferred to go to at the time, but the reason I left to go to Leeds was because it was out of London, and the external people around me I needed to get away from. He might need to be in that situation and go, do you know what, I'll get rid of him and stay in Manchester, or I've got to leave Manchester and get rid of those people. It might not just be that. I think it's an accumulation of different things, but that could be a big part, because the people around you do have a big influence on how you are. It's definitely, especially accountability.
How good do you think he is now? I think Rashford probably over the last sort of 4 or 5 years, alongside probably Fernandes, have probably been seen as the players for United who they've got. I mean, how good do you think he is? Because when people say he's out of form, or he should be doing this, he should be doing that, is he of the level of Salah, Son, Haaland, those type of... I don't actually think he is. I think he's just... I've always said that. I think he's just a level below that. So I sometimes think the expectation on him to be what they are for their teams, I'm not quite sure he's at that level, to be honest.
I think he's shown moments where you go...
It's City
level.
Goal.
You talk about those teams, the structure behind those teams to help different. Those players as
so
well.
So you think if he was in a better... So going back to Rio's point, if he moved to a team that had better structure, better organisation, whatever, do you think he'd be at that level?
Only because of the ability that we've seen, and we've seen in flashes, and not just on the Premier League stage, on the world stage. We've seen him in World Cup play well as well. And I think that, you know, he's somebody that he's had good moments and he's had bad moments. And what you need is a consistency with your team that can make you continue to play consistently. I think when we're talking about body language and everything, it can get dangerous because nobody at Man United, for me, is playing particularly well. He gets more. He gets more for whatever reason. Maybe, like when you were talking about not long ago, coming from the area and he should be doing more. Yes, I understand all that. But he does get more. But I think a lot of it does stem from the fact that he's not in a great structure of how he played. He came through all that that time when he had the injury and he was still playing through the injury. All that stuff, he's been through a lot to get to where he is now. And he's still inconsistent. And I think it's got something to do with the way they play. And he's not playing in a system. What's making him grow in the system?
But when you're the biggest player, you're the biggest star, the light shines bright
Absolutely.
On you. And in moments where it's not going well, you're the guy that takes all of the kind of the punches. And it's unfortunate for him. But when you talk about is he that level, I think he does show moments where you go, gee, he does take your breath away with some of the things that he does. He just doesn't do it enough. And I agree with Ryan. I don't know if it's the team. He needs a structure. I think we all needed a team around us to be the players that we became. And he hasn't had the consistent team around him or the consistency of the managers being there. But I think you just put ability to one side and you just look at the basics of his game. Like, what's he good at? He's great at running behind. As a defender, I wouldn't want to play against him. He'd give you nightmares because he can run behind. He's so quick. His timing's brilliant. He can finish as well. But either he doesn't run behind as much as maybe he should, or he's disillusioned because the ball ain't coming and he's kept running behind. It ain't coming. And I don't know what it is. He needs to work that out. I mean, you're a striker, right? What would you be doing in those situations where it's not going for you?
But the thing is, with me and the way I played up front, I was up the centre, waiting for things to build up. He's on the left, waiting for things to happen. And when sometimes the ball comes to him, maybe after a while he hasn't had it, and he's trying to take people on, and you lose the ball in those situations. Whereas some of the times me playing down the centre, you can make a run, you might get a shot, you lay it off, you get in, you're involved in the game all the time. You're building yourself in the game. And when you look at Rashford, some of the times he's not in the game at all, which is very difficult.
My thing about him is he's had good seasons and not good, great seasons. Listen, we've all been there as players. But you said before about not having that team and structure behind him, and I get that. But I played in a Liverpool team who was never the best. A team fighting for the top four. And that's what Man United have probably been over the last, sort of, say, 7 or 8 years. And you had sort of Stevie being that figure. So I'm saying Rashford's that figure, the main man, you know, he shines brightly on him. I'd want more from him, not just say he's got to score every week, but taking that sort of mantle of, like, I'm going to run everywhere. You're looking down.
Do we make excuses for him?
And I go back to Tottenham. You're talking about other teams having structure. Tottenham have been a basket case for a long time. You know, like, different managers, different styles of play. Harry Kane's always there. Son's always there.
What do you mean excuses for him?
Just put the structure around him, the team around him.
Do you think he'd be playing better? The way his ability, do you think, in a structured team, would he be playing better?
There's no question mark about his ability, absolutely. But right, we've all made the point, he's outstanding, but there's something amiss with him. You look, and we've had these conversations every few months, a player can have an off spell or a dip, but I just look at his, I almost look as if he's certainly not enjoying his football.
No, Roy, I we're here to football, but actually before when I was talking and said about I'm worried about him, you were nodding. Yeah. I'm actually worried about him, to me, beyond
personal.
Football.
Yeah,
look
no,
at him.
Yeah, I'm not, I wouldn't say I'm worried about him, but you look at a player and go, there's something amiss, there's something going on with this kid.
Something, eh?
You're on about the people around him, would it be family or the manager? You're on about Ferguson, like, screaming, who's on his case every day?
Yeah.
who's giving them? There's nothing wrong with the old-fashioned kick up the arse and go, come on, we need more from you. When the team's not at it, if you want to be this leader and you're under big contracts, then there is that responsibility.
But he still needs that. He needs that to be happening. If there's no one around for him to happen.
But I don't think that is happening. I don't think there's anybody on his case. But that doesn't mean to say he still can't produce and start running a bit more. He's been at the club a long time since he was a kid. Pressure affects different players. Body language, you go down to it. But sometimes there is that. Sometimes you got to get hold of a player and go.
Nothing changes in respect of an experienced players in a team that's meant to help you.
There's loads of experience around him.
Who would you say?
Maguire's experience, Varane's experience.
I'd expect more from Varane, but Maguire.
Yeah, but he's experienced, right? You've asked, there's experienced players around him. There's international players around him. Players who are older.
He hasn't got respect for them players.
I don't think he's got respect for them, but he has experience around him.
But you have to respect the experience around you because look at Harry Maguire and what Harry Maguire's going through. Yes, you'd like to think that Harry can step above that and try and help a young player through, but man's got his own problems. And if that was the case, surely he'd be helping Marcus.
But the other players, lads who've won the World Cup, lads who've won European Cups, are they getting a grip of him?
Shouldn't Rashford be helping? What I'm saying is Rashford's the main man.
He's hand in hand. He's the main hand in hand.
26, isn't he?
And 26.
Young and
it's really, I hear what Gary's saying and there's a deep worry to him because like for his form and like people talk about how he is on the pitch and everything.
And he chips.
It's really, chips. It's not, chips is rice.
Chips.
But
chips
why are we having the same conversation every few months about Rashford?
I don't know why he gets so much, to be honest, for some reason. You know, I saw him doing an interview the other day talking about why are they talking about my off-field, my this, my that? Why is that all that part of it? Why does that have to be part of it? Why all of them are buying the gear and buying the cars and doing the stuff and doing, and he's the one that's more than anyone else, especially who gets hammered.
Do you think like should you be getting caught like going out and whatever else? Would you not be a little bit more careful?
Well, when you're going out, Jill, you're trying to be careful. Things happen.
If all the eyes are on you and you know there's that like heated press on you at the minute, do you know what I mean? I think why. Are you maybe missing training?
I don't mind.
When you're United, just.
Yeah. I can imagine what it's like, you know, being at United.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
When the boss left, it's been talked about now for I don't know how long, 10, 11 years ago. You were there at the very beginning when obviously it went from sort of the boss leaving to this new era of which has been a struggle. And it became difficult quite quickly. And obviously you were still there, Nemanja Vidic was still there, I think Patrice was still there, Michael Carrick was still there, Rat Giggsy was still there. You think about the five or six players in that dressing room. What changed? What was it that all of a sudden became going from a title winner to feeling... Because obviously you were title winners, you know, between you all, you won dozens of them. What happened? I mean, I wasn't there. What happened in that dressing room psychologically, culturally, mentally? What happened?
We were old. That was one thing. We were old, like the guys you mentioned there. I don't know. I think
the word was really that he came in and he changed a lot of things, telling you stuff and what you weren't used to. And
yeah, I think there's a few like old wives' tales, lies, little white lies. Right. He would say that he showed us me and Nemanja Vidic a video of like Filip Jagielka and whoever.
Did that happen?
That didn't happen.
No.
No, okay.
But
It was Les Scott.
Yeah. Do you know what it was? It was two moments happened, or two moments, probably three. One of the moments, I remember getting on the plane after a tour. You know what them tours are like when you used to go to, like, I think it was Asia or someone that we went with them. Tiring, weren't they? They were tiring tours, long 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Hard work, time difference, etc. I remember getting on the plane on the way home and seeing the manager sprawled out on the chair, look dishevelled. Big club, this, isn't it? That's what he said to me.
Well.
And I thought, ooh. Like, I've said this before, but like a kit launch at Everton's at Goodison on the pitch, isn't it? No disrespect. A kit launch at United is like a worldwide tour.
Mm. Yeah.
It's very different. So he quickly grasped that at the end of this tour, and I thought, OK, I'd like to have thought that he might have known that before. OK, you let that pass. We play against Liverpool and Chelsea, and I remember in the training sessions, we were setting up to stop Hazard and Coutinho, and he put a box in the middle of the pitch, or in the area that they play on, the inside left, and the players are looking at each other like, we don't really set up to stop individuals. Never done that at United, really. I don't know if you guys remember anything like that. Messi didn't even really have a massive plan for him. We should have.
Should have.
But it wasn't like it was
like
almost like
that.
Yeah, it was almost
to.
Like that mindset as that you worry about us more than we worry about you. And them two games really made me think, wow, we're setting up almost like as a defeatist mentality and very different to what a title-winning team was last season. So it was a very big shift in the mindset. And that was one of the things that I think a lot of the players were like, not against him, but just like it gives you a question mark in your head. And that little question mark is a big thing within a squad.
It reminds me a little bit of when Roy Hodgson came to Liverpool. And that... David Moyes done a brilliant job at Everton, but it's a completely different job at Man United and Roy at Liverpool. And I always remember, you can't change your mindset, really. It's difficult. And I always remember, I think the third or fourth game of that season, you played at Anfield. I think I just joined Sky. And Daniel Sturridge scored the winner. Remember, like a back header. And then second half, I don't know if you were playing in the game, Rio, but you pushed Liverpool back and you hit the crossbar, but you lost the game. And then I always remember Moyes' interview afterwards. It was like he was really pleased with how you played.
Yeah.
And I remember saying, that's the mentality, that's what Everton would have done if they'd come to Anfield. They'd be going, my God, we put them on. I know we lost, but we put them on the back foot. We did this. And I was thinking, it doesn't matter how you play in them games, even if you play well. If you get beat, you got beat. Yeah. And that's the end of it. Mm. Do you know what I mean? And I just thought, he's going to have to get used to that change of, like, it's not enough going away to a big ground and playing well if you get beat. And it's just trying to change that mentality, I think, for a manager is difficult.
But really, from a player's perspective, did you feel that did you feel that the team and the players dropped any percentage? Do you feel like there was an element of sort of also, there was a bit of a bit like, you know what I mean, just to that edge off your game, you know what I mean?
I think we were talking about Marcus there, about personal pride of performance and whatnot and effort and work ethic we were just all talking about. I think that's something that I don't think really drops your work ethic. But in terms of like tactical, when you I don't know, have you ever been in a changing where you're questioning the manager's tactics in your head? It does take something out of you, I think. And the first thing you do, if you're not as sure about and confident in them tactics, you do look over your... That little look over your shoulder as to what are we doing is a big thing and takes it out of your game.
To be fair, it's not that. It's actually devastating. Mm. Because the minute the players start doing that, it's a devastating thing. Not just in any football team, in any sort of environment, because that's where you start to get that negativity spiral. When you're all starting to sort of whisper and you're all starting to talk, and then not the excuses, but the drain starts to occur, I think.
A little thing. Remember what the boss used to do, where we used to go on a Friday night at a hotel or the Saturday morning before a game. If you sat at your table, you knew someone was getting told that they're not playing. Mm. Or he's changed the squad, you're out of the squad, or you're going to be in the stands. He said, I remember David Moyes said, I don't do that. You're just not playing. If whoever it is, I'm not explaining myself to anybody. If you want to come and see me, come and see me Monday. So obviously there's a lot of...
Was he aggressive in his vibe?
No, he was just, this is what I am. This is what I'm doing. And I you respect that, but then sometimes if it's a squad game and the squad wins you everything, it ain't just the first 11. You've got to take care of those other guys who are on the peripheral of the squad, the peripheral of the team. And he was like, this is the way I'm doing it now. And so that doesn't affect me because I was playing at the time when he first come in. But there are players, Chicharito, for instance, you could tell he's sitting there going... Like, Sir Alex Ferguson respected me.
Yeah.
And he took that as maybe as a disrespect. And other players who were squad players may be the same.
You know, when you've been with one manager for so long, I remember when we changed managers at City, and I had, when I look back, I had such a closed mindset. I wasn't open to change. And plus, you're at United, you've been winning things, and then someone comes in. Do you think it was a little bit of that as well, or were you open to change?
You're right. David Moyes said to me once, he said, I felt like the stepfather walking in, trying to instruct the children of the father that's left.
Can't win.
He said, and I thought it was a really... I've never heard a better analogy, actually.
Yeah, it's a good analogy, simply because he's coming... He was chosen by Sir Alex to come in. He's been given this, like, this kind of, like, esteem. So he's coming in and he wants people to know that I'm here, man, this is it, and I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. You have to look at it from David Moyes' point of view as well. This is a massive thing for him.
Yeah, absolutely.
Massive thing for him.
Did Ferguson ever come in? Even though, no, not at all, no. There's always them stories years ago at Liverpool when Shankly left that he'd still sort of pop into the training ground. Was there ever that feeling that he'd be about? No?
No. I went and see the gaffer around Christmas time for a coffee. He asked to see me, just asking what's going on. And I was like... Not going that
way. You're writing him out.
We're not going that way at the moment. We're not winning games. You know what I mean? So you could just say what's on the tin. But Gaff obviously wanted him to do well. Do you know what I mean? The way he spoke to me was like he was gutted with the way things were panning out. And so I felt sorry for David Moyes. I think anyone who come in there is an impossible job. After Klopp now,
who
comes in, it's going to have to be go some to keep that consistency and recharge that team and go again. But
is it you?
You still hope a group of players, though, a senior group of players, would give a manager the benefit of the doubt. I know we've had conversations before about different managers going in and the perception of a manager coming in and would it be the staff he brings in. Obviously, Ferguson's left. And he makes a couple of them decisions and the players who are setting their ways. Mm. And then it's subconsciously you're already making your mind up that maybe he's not the one... So what chance has a manager got when he walks into a building?
Exactly.
And you're still talking about experienced players not going, OK, we'll have to roll with that bit. We'll have to roll with the fact he doesn't tell the players they're not playing or whatever. Because whatever you've been used to, obviously a new manager coming in, new ideas.
No, them conversations did happen where you go, listen, it's changed now. Gaffer's not here no more. Just get on with it. Because you see the body language in the face.
Oh, I know, but subconsciously, Rio, you players, because that's what we do. When people come in, you're going to go, what have you got? What are you bringing to the party? Would it be coaching staff? And if players, especially if a group of players and a manager just and he doesn't win the first few games or they don't bring a couple of players in, I think the transfer was a problem. Remember his first summer, David Moyes, he didn't get a couple of players he was after and all of a sudden you're
people
almost beaten before,
before you start. Out of signings
and then you've got no momentum. Of course, that was a big one.
Massive.
He brought a player from Everton, all that type of perception of a manager coming in. And then when you've no momentum, you've no feel-good factor towards this manager, it's a long way back. Mm. Absolutely. So you do feel... I look at it from the other side. I look from a manager and go, hey, lads, hopefully these experienced players will get me over the line as well, where I am finding my feet, even though he's an experienced manager.
Also, the first thing I said, we were old as players. Your impact and influence on a team, like, doing that. So there's new young players. The Chris Smallings, Phil Jones are coming in. And they're having more of an impact in the team from a playing perspective. Mm. I get your point about in the background talking, but your main talking and your main work does get done in the 90 minutes. So it becomes difficult. Giggsy's not playing as much. Do you know what I mean? Nemanja Vidic
injuries. What about a staff, Rio? Was that an issue? Like David, I know there was a lot of talking, and I would never knock a manager for bringing all his own staff in, but then there was talk, should have kept on to one or two. I'm not saying that would have been the answer, like Mickey Feeding or one or two others. Mm. Was that feeding amongst the players a little bit? There was lots of change.
No, I think the manager said to me, like he said that he did say to David Moyes, he advised him, maybe to keep one of his staff on, either Rene...
Continuity. I get that.
Or Mick Phelan. And Mick Phelan, listen, I called Mick Phelan out a couple of times when I was there. I've spoken to him since about it, and the manager said to me in uncertain terms when he told me to shut up, he said, the importance of this man, don't ever underestimate it because of what he does for me as a manager. He allows me to delegate and let him do a lot of the hard... pushing and pulling, and I just
see the referee and trainee just bullied.
Yeah, hammered him every day. But he said like that was what they would have been there for, to kind of appease him a little bit and get him through that the hurdles that he'll come across. But he chose to go his own way, and again I respect that. He said, "Listen, I'm not listening to you. You're the main man, Sir Alex. But I'm going to go my own way." I respected that, but with hindsight, which is a great thing, he probably would have maybe had a little bit more help. Just that getting on the plane, I probably wouldn't have seen him like that, dishevelled. After the tour for two weeks, because Mick Phelan would have dealt with all logistics, all of the medical staff, and when you get up, when you go to bed, when you're eating your food, etc., and travel. Yeah.
Might have had a night out, Rio. Give him a beer.
Jesus Christ. We've all gotten plans like that, haven't we? After the tour.
Rio, just me home. Just going back a little bit before that, the period from 2006 to 2011 is Manchester United's most successful period ever, in the sense there was four title wins and three Champions League finals. And the greatest team of all time is now, you know, widely recognised as being that Barcelona team that we played twice in the Champions League final. Do you ever look back at those two matches and you're smiling now? Because obviously I was there, I think, for both of them in terms of hearing the sort of team talks. I was, you know, I retired on the second one and was still in the dressing room though. Do you look back at those things and think, that would have been us. We'd have been the greatest team of all time if we'd beaten Barcelona in them two games. What do you reflect upon those two games and how... You know, what could we have done differently?
Scored more.
What, that Barcelona team?
They were too good. They were just like that. That's it. Like, it almost gives me a little bit of like, what's the word where you go? It takes the sting out of it a little bit that they were actually that good. If we get beat by a team that's in and around us, like, we should have done a bit more. Yeah. Listen, they took all our weapons off us, and we went to a war with no guns, no knives. Like, that's what it felt like. I actually, it's the only time in my career where I've been in a game and thought, we can't do anything. That's what it felt like. And they were that good. They had us like on a roundabout, continuous, just like flying about, dizzy. I remember me and Emmanuel standing at Wembley and just, you know, you have that sometimes you have a look at each other during a game. It's like you haven't got to say a word, but
yeah.
We're getting pumped.
Gosh.
We're getting pumped, and like can't do nothing about it.
Who was their forwards then? The front three.
Was it Pedro Messi?
Pedro one side, Messi was the false number nine then, and just didn't play nowhere near.
David Villa. It was
Pedro was the one.
Yes. Yeah.
Like, because without the ball, he was a trigger. Trigger run behind, but the trigger. Well, as soon as they lost the ball, bang! He was like, they were so aggressive. All 5'5", aggressive, just take the ball off you.
Before the game, they were saying United
would have an advantage because it's at Wembley.
I remember
when the teams got picked, and I was at home, obviously desperate to see Barcelona win it, but no, I remember looking at the Man U team going, wow.
Very
good,
like, team.
It was like Giggs, he played centre, it was like 4-4-2. Giggs was in centre midfield, I think, with Carrick. And I'm thinking,
you're not getting the
even
ball
if you had Roy Keane and Brian Robson at the peak in a two on their own in there.
You get run around. 4v2 in there.
And this is like, I mean, obviously Giggs in kind of great players. And I always remember Wayne scored just before half time. And me watching, I was thinking, because if you're getting beat 1-0, it's hard to go more defensive, if you know what I mean. And I was watching that thinking, the Rooney goal means it gives you a chance to actually get another midfield or move Wayne wide and bring someone else in. Just go 4-5-1 and you can do that at 1-1. And then you come out second half and it was the same. And I was like, oh my God.
You need about nine in midfield.
Yeah, that's what it is.
I was with Bastian Schweinsteiger yesterday, I interviewed him, and they got pumped off Barcelona. I don't know what year it was, but then they played them the year after and they beat them 7-0 over two legs.
Yeah.
And basically they had a meeting before the game and they basically worked at Robin and Ribéry with their wide players. And obviously Barcelona's midfield player, fullback sometimes would come into midfield, and they literally said to Robin and Ribéry, just stand in central midfield with us, and we're just going to, whatever, how many players they have in there, we're just going to go have exactly the same number of players in there. And they ended up doing them in the end and counter-attacking off them. But we were quite open in midfield that game, weren't we?
Did you feel like they just had an extra player? I remember playing Spain loads of times.
Three or four players.
Then I'd be like, I remember one point counting the players on the pitch. I was like, how have they got, like, it was as if they had extra players.
I remember just standing. I picked up the ball. It was a bit of a scuffle with Busquets, and I was late on the win. I took the ball off him, and the referee blew the whistle, and he went, "You, Vidic, boom, boom, boom." I felt so embarrassed. I've never been so embarrassed on the pitch. And I remember standing after the game watching them go up to get a trophy. I think it was me, Giggsy, and Scholesy, and Wazza might have been there. And you got your hat, everyone does that now. I think we would have started that. Yeah. But let's get off this pitch. We've been embarrassed.
That's the problem when you play for a big club like United. You play Barcelona, you're on about you just do a wee play. But sometimes you have to change. You're playing against these brilliant teams, and we've done it earlier. Barcelona used to toy with us, and we'd always play 4-4-2. So sometimes you look back and go, yeah, it's nice to be brave. But there's a fine line between brave.
Yeah. We beat Spain in the Euros and we had 20% possession and they had 80, but we hit them on two counters. But if we hadn't played like that, we would have got absolute. Yeah, so you do have to...
We'd done that in 2008, hadn't we?
Yeah, away. Yeah. We'd done it away.
Well, and you won.
No, we beat them in the semi-final in 2008. Yeah. It wasn't Pep's team, but it was something similar. Scholes scored the long-range goal. Right, yeah, 1-0 on the two legs, yeah.
And did they dominate possession?
Yeah, just a bit.
But I think that game, the tactics, we kind of played... In both the games, both them finals, we played pressing really high.
Proactive, yeah, weren't we?
And our game around that time probably wasn't that against the big teams in Europe when we were going playing. Like Lyon away was a hard game back then, and other teams we used to play. We used to be a bit more solid. Well,
do you think it was something to do? Because it's interesting. So I go back to the Champions League final. We played in 2005, but we did something different in that final that we'd done getting there. And I don't know if it's something to do. Speaking to Rafa afterwards, it was about, it's a one-off game, it's not a two-leg. So sometimes when you go away, you go, OK, we're doing this, and then we're going to get them at home and we're going to do this. I didn't know, if maybe it might be something to do with that in terms of it's a one-off game, it's a final, no one's home or away.
The boss is a maverick, though, as well. He smells something and just goes with it, you know what I mean? And that's what I think he was. And to be fair, his instincts were right, because in the first game in Rome, if you remember, we had three or four chances that we could have scored off them playing that, but us pressing really high. But once they got that goal... Yeah. The game was dead.
Do you know what I think we're thinking about him? I think that he thought of the game as being, this is my legacy.
Yeah.
And I think he thought, I need to win this the way that I play, and we're going to go and take on Barcelona, and we're going to go and sort of, if you like, because I think the year before when we beat them in the 2008 semi-final, I don't know if you remember, you talked about tactics before, about we never did anything different. Do you remember Carlos putting the map?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's the only time I've ever seen a Manchester United coach. You talked about it before and I thought about it. He put a mat on the pitch, like a rug. I don't know what it was. It was some sort of like...
The cones on.
Yeah, and he basically said to Scholes and to Carrick, who are in midfield, he said, one of you's always got to be stood there, right? And so basically, if anyone... And we did the most disciplined performance I've ever seen. He actually put Rooney and Ji-Sung Park, I think, in the wide areas. It was Scholes and Carrick in midfield. And basically, with this training for 2 days, even handball at times, because it was like in between games, where basically, let's say Carrick went over to this side, Scholes had to be literally on this mat. And they did it in the game for 180 minutes. It's the only time. But we were literally like...
Did it work?
Do you remember Arsenal?
It works because you win.
So it's on a rush when you get the right result. Arsenal at City last week, it was exactly like that for 180 minutes and then scores a worldie.
Yeah. Like protection. Are you going to go to DFS and drop a rug off a Carrick?
For Sunday. Rio, the opposite of that, the last game I saw you play was as a pundit. Would it be at QPR at home? You finished at QPR, didn't you?
Yeah. Not good times.
And I watched you then, I thought, I always remember I finished at United and that was me. I know you talked about it, haven't you, going up to Celtic and you think about, do you wish you'd finished at United?
Yeah.
Because it was difficult to watch you at QPR in terms of how it was for you compared to how you'd been.
Yeah, because it's the first time I've been in a change room and I've heard people talk about money. Wages.
That's why you went there, wasn't it?
That's why they were talking about
it. Your wages.
No, play. I'm just like, are you not training? No, like, I'm on 60 grand a week. I don't care. Like, there was like things you'd hear, murmurings of that type of stuff, and I'm sitting there just thinking, I just don't understand this. It's mad. And players just like not training when they want, intensity weren't really high, and for whatever Harry's trying to do, it's like it was the players just never talk about buying into it, just weren't having it at all. And that team ended up getting relegated, right? But I knew. I remember I used to travel in with Bobby Zamora because we were from a similar area in the car. I remember being in the back of the car one day after about a month. I remember Bobby...
Was he your driver?
No. All right. He was next to us.
He was in the back of the car. You were right.
And then he's gone... He just started laughing, and I was like, I hadn't said anything. And I said, you're right. He said, what the fuck are you doing here? Like, because he could see my body was shut down. I was injuries. I was having to, like, plasters my way through games and manage myself through training sessions. And he was like, well, why are you doing this? But it's like a boxer, and he said, that one last fight, you think there's something else in there for you. Can go and play last season in London, back home, my kids were of an age where they understood football a bit more. Yeah. I want them to see that. And then, obviously, my missus got ill at the time, and so that was like compounded everything, and it just kind of it all falls down then.
I bumped into you, remember? I bumped into you at Wembley, not that you were ever going to listen to me. And you were on about leaving United. I said, well, whatever you do. I said, why don't you treat yourself and go abroad for a year? You know, even I think I said France or something. I said, I'd be wary of going to another English team because obviously what you've done at United, and you obviously didn't listen to me. because sometimes, yeah, they listen, but there are decisions you make because, you spoil it. Again, leaving United was always going to be stepped down, wasn't it?
Yeah. And I actually was talking to clubs abroad, because that was my first thing. I wanted to go abroad. But obviously, personal circumstances.
Of course.
So, yeah. But yeah, no, I wish I'd definitely...
Were the injuries kicking in then, Ree? Was it to a point where you think, you know something, I probably can get through this the way it is. I could feel it. It's like me with my ankle. I felt, you know what, I could probably get through this for another year. Was you in that place where you said, yeah, I could get through this, it would be OK?
Yeah. I did genuinely think I'd be fine, I'd get through it. Harry spoke to him, I'll manage your games, you ain't got to train every day, just make sure you're ready for the games. And that's, I thought, yeah, I could do that easily. But you was at United with me. Like, I used to walk in on a Monday after a game or Sunday, I used to walk in a... The lads used to take the piss out of me. Because I'd be so bent over, and I'd take tablets.
I remember that at West Ham, when we first got West Ham, they used to have that problem. You had to get rid of a car, didn't you? Because the car was bad for your back.
Yeah.
No, the car. I heard that.
It's
I heard that with Rodwell as well at Everton. He used to be literally sitting on the floor, and, you know, he used to get a lot of hamstring problems.
Well, you change everything, you know what I mean? Your bed, you change your mattress, everything. You try to work it out. I used to remember the cushion I used to walk about with.
Yeah.
Sit on a cushion to make sure my back posture was right. But when I hit 30, I remember Giggsy, I used to do yoga, didn't he?
Yeah.
And I remember Giggsy used to say to me, when you hit 30, your body changes and then you'll start feeling things you never knew you had in your body. And I never really took it seriously. And the moment I swear I hit 30, I was getting injuries that I never, like little spasms in my calves. I started doing yoga with Ryan and Karras. But it was like, from 30 years old, I was always constantly like wary of injuries at that time.
Go back to the start of your career here, because I remember, obviously, you came to Old Trafford once, you got pumped 7-0 with West Ham, and they were singing Rio for England.
Yeah, it was unbelievable.
It was brilliant. And you were, at that time...
You were laughing as well.
you had a mistake in you. You were young, you took risks. And then, was it the move to Leeds that completely changed your sort of mindset on seriousness around defending? Or was it... Because when you came to United, I always remember the words you said to me before every single game, nothing down our side. Mm. And it was a serious nothing down our side. I don't imagine the young Rio Ferdinand. So where have you gone from that sort of, if you like, carefree centre-back that's, if you like, giving a goal away or two, you know, every other week, to being... this serious defender who's coming up to me before a game, who's been at United for 10 years, saying nothing down our side. Yeah. When's that change come?
When he had to play with you.
I think when I was at West Ham, I'm coming from an estate where I've got all my mates going, what's going on every day? Like, oh, my match of the day, are you on tonight? Like, so all I'm thinking about is impressing my mates, really. And that would be just doing skills against a forward. we could get beat 3-1, but I've done a bit of skill and I go to my mates, watch your match of the day, they might be going to show it. And they wouldn't. But that was my mindset. It was all about if I'd done a bit of skill on a forward or if I'd come out with a ball for 3 or 4 times in a game. And obviously, as if Harry's championing that with me, and he's going, this is brilliant, you're like a Rolls Royce, you're this, you're that and the other. So I'm not getting that kind of defensive tutoring consistently, other than the odd bit here and there, 1v1s in training. And so, and to be fair, I'm getting applauded in the media for being a bit different as a centre-half. So I'm thinking, I'm doing everything right here. Mm. And then I went to Leeds, and I remember when I signed for Leeds, they were talking about, you know, the agents and that, talking, negotiating the contract money. And I said, can I just speak to the manager? And I rang him and said, are you just going to coach me how to defend? Just coach me more, be aggressive.
David O'Leary.
Yeah, David O'Leary. And to be fair, he was true to his word. Him and Roy Aitken and Eddie Gray drilled me constantly on the training pitch. And obviously, going from West Ham to Leeds, who are playing Champions League football, the stakes are higher. You take it a bit more seriously, your defensive responsibilities, and you start looking at the game a bit different. And that was part of the development. But also, coming to United was just a totally different... I'm coming in there with you guys who have won, like, 4, 5, 6 Premier Leagues at that time, and I'm sitting there, like, on 0 trophies at all, let alone Premier League medals. And so I'm just sitting there thinking, like, how can I get better? And I remember we played West Brom. I don't know if you remember. I played West Brom, and I tried to do a couple of like crossfield passes early just to show people, you know what I mean,
good money. Yeah.
And then they got cut out, and Kumas hit the bar once, and I think almost scored the other one. And I remember coming at half time, and the manager roasted me, unloaded. Like, I don't know who you think you are. Give it to someone who can pass that ball. Blah, blah. And so you just like, you kind of take down your ego a little bit, and you're like, what's your responsibility in this team? There's so many better players with the ball who are there to create chances. I ain't got to do what I was doing before. Yeah. Just be good at defending. And so that's where that I used to always short and sharp little comments like that to you. Nani was, I know I always say certain things, Wazza the same. But like our side, you go tight, don't worry what's behind you. That's my responsibility, like little things like that, telling you, but also making sure that I'm ready in the game as well.
Do you prefer how centre-halves play now? Because with you being a technical centre-half, you know, when you say about the boom-boom, like, because you like to play.
Yeah, but it's Busquets right? saying boom-boom. If it's Busquets saying it, you kind of take
that. You've got to take it. But I look at it now, my boys play, your boys play now, and the risk they take, man, I'm sitting there thinking, wow, one of my kids is a goalkeeper. And what he has to do on the ball, I didn't have to take responsibility like that as a player on the pitch. But
do you think it would have elevated you even higher as a player, the way they play now, receiving the ball in the six-yard box, being almost playmakers from the back?
Stepping into midfield.
I think you've said in the past, I think you've mentioned this maybe with Eriksen a little bit with England, where you almost felt like you were stopped from being what you could have been. But was that also at Manchester United as well, what you've just said about Ferguson?
So Alex Ferguson was the same. I think Glenn Hoddle was always encouraging me to run out with the ball. He said to Incy, and Incy was one of my heroes as a kid, he said, Incy, you step back when we was on the ball. And I was like, Jesus. So the confidence I had doing that, and I think that if I was given that confidence by a manager and the structure of the way they're playing now, maybe I would have been better, or I'd have got a bit extra percentage out of my performance. But I think I learned over time that I used to approach a game and go into it, what can I do with the ball? Which was wrong for a centre-half to be thinking. It was more, my mindset was, in the end, when I got to United, was it grew into being, right, clean sheets, defend first, and then the natural ability would just do what it's got to do, but I have to really focus on my defensive responsibilities to be as good as I can be.
I always say that, because we all describe players, and I always think all of us as players, we always get put in a box, you know, of like, you're this, and you're known as like a ball-playing centre-back, and then not so much a defender, as you just mentioned there at West Ham. But I actually think it was a little bit different than that, whereas the managers you had, you'd basically had centre-back. Who did we pass to at centre-back? You're giving it to your full-back, you're giving it to midfield, but you were a great defender and didn't get enough credit for being a great defender.
Maybe because the narrative was about maybe being different, because there wasn't so many ball-playing defenders then, so that probably took over, was the first thing that comes to mind. But it's like we were talking about Marcus, I keep mentioning him, but sometimes you need people to kind of influence you as well. I remember I've always said this about Roy, when I signed, you were the captain, but I remember playing a ball to Gary in training, like a simple 5-10 yarder, and you fucking went mad. And I'm sitting there going, what? He said, take some responsibility, pass it. Don't just keep giving it a simple pass. You know, at Leeds and West Ham now. And I was sitting there thinking,
nice,
this guy is like, ease me in, man.
He's right. He was right.
Yeah.
And I knew when you give the Gary, we want to get it. I think there's nothing worse than a defender at United. I don't know if it's like that at every club. I don't know if it's like that at every club now. But if you gave a goal away, or you're responsible for giving a goal, you carried that, not just for, you carried that for might be. I might carry that for a few weeks. I'm like, I've got to have a few weeks now, mistake free, or else I'm on a rotter.
Yeah.
No, do you know what I mean? It's true. If you give a, that was how serious
it
was.
That's pride, wasn't it? That's pride.
It's like really bad for you to give a goal away, or even have a part.
Because you can't have people saying he'll give you something.
Yeah.
If Ronaldo carries on playing like that, and I'm going to chase him down because he'll give us something. Because
Stuart Pearce done that to me.
Yeah.
Stuart Pearce, another one who you look at, he's a hero, England player, legend, whatever. He's at Newcastle, end of his career, coming in at half time. You might have been with us at West Ham then. Coming in at half time, and he just shouted, he'll give us one.
Yeah.
Rio will give us one. I was like, fucking
It gets into your head, though, doesn't it? I remember going to centre-half and, you know, when they do the press and they'd always leave it for the ball to come to me, because, you know, they obviously press the good centre-half to start, and I'd be like, oh, for God's sake, you know then that you're the bad one.
You're the one that they've been talking about.
Let Jill have the ball.
That's what I used to say to people. You was the main focus of our meeting.
Yeah, exactly.
Talk to us about the partnership with Vidic and obviously for probably the best in Europe, I would imagine, for probably three or four seasons, that partnership, I would say. Who was the most important person in that partnership? Difficult one for you to answer, but...
I think we both needed each other. Vida, I interviewed him a while for Five, a little plug. it took an hour. he said, which I agree with, he said, Nemanja Vidic isn't Nemanja Vidic without the relationship with Rhea. And I'd say exactly the same. Like, there's only some players who probably attack in areas, midfield area, where you can go and do something on their own and just be that on their own. But I needed him as much as he needed me, definitely. Mm. Like, we had such different makeup as players as well. He was like a more aggressive front foot, attack everything in the air, body on the line always. And I was just a bit, I'd want to sweep, look after things behind him maybe and be a bit more of that security behind at times, still step in at times, whatever. But so complemented each other, different styles. But there may have been times when one of us was more important than the other at certain periods, maybe. But I think in the main, I think we definitely needed each other, 100%. Because he was like, when he first signed, do you remember when he first signed? The lad just thinks, saying, like, he needs to go back. He was so bad in training.
I remember him in a game at Anfield. And him and Evra were both on the same side. I think it might have been the game where O'Shea scored in the last kick of the game. I think it might have been that one. And I think it was Bellamy. Bellamy against Vidic in that first half. We were attacking the cop first half. It was like, I remember Ferguson at the side, because I was right-sided centre-back, so I wasn't far from the bench. I remember Ferguson, like, not screaming, but almost like trying to actually just calm him down. He was like...
He was an emotional man, wasn't he? He was a really emotional guy, like, and he was either... It was never too high, but he could always go too low, like, the bottom of the sea. Like, he was like... a bad pass or a bad performance at early stage of his career, it like you say, a hangover for the rest of that week. He wouldn't talk to people. Yeah. And so it took him a while to get through that. But you remember, he's come from the Russian league.
Exactly.
He had that time to adapt. And I remember Wazza coming up and said, Wazza playing against me training, saying, like, he's terrible. He can't play for us. Like, so it's like, send him. And Patrice, the same about Patrice. Send these two, but have we signed them? And then he's playing against Luis Saha. Rooney, Cristiano, I think Tevez might have been there. Yeah, then. Like, playing it, them four in training every day. Imagine that's difficult.
It's a test, yeah.
Harder than most games on a Saturday. So, but what I would say is that grit and determination and that perseverance to better himself. He used to look at his body and say, "Wow, look at the state of me." Wow.
Like, he used to question his body.
Remember, he questioned his body all the time. His physique, and then he went going to the gym.
He wasn't the biggest, was he?
Nah, he had massive legs.
The reason I say that, I remember bumping into him on holiday. And just like didn't know him really, but like on a beach somewhere,
Blackpool.
And, skiing. I was surprised. I always had him down. I was like this big man, and he wasn't frame wise.
So
was
aggressive.
He?
Yeah. So aggressive. He used to. I mean, how many times did he break his nose?
Yeah.
He had the worst nose in the game, right? But you'd come in and go.
It's the greasy.
You're truly. He'd come in, and then you'd go. Like, you'd be laughing and going, "What's wrong with you?" Like. Go up and protect it, but he said, "I just see the ball." Yeah. Headbutt the back of people's heads. Like, he was like a lunatic, but he was a
great lad.
Player, great lad.
Student to the game.
Yeah. Was he the best player that you played with, would
best
you say?
Partner.
Yeah.
It got the best out of me.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, my partnership with Sol, I enjoy playing that because, again, he was front foot, aggressive, quick, could cover the channels as well. Sol was a top player. He don't get talked about.
Yeah, you're right.
Like sometimes when you're talking about top defenders, he was like a really like that period, especially like from what was it 98 onwards for a few years. He was flat.
No, 2001 probably a bit after that with the
98 when he went to Arsenal.
Yeah, when he went to Arsenal, 2001 maybe.
But even like, the last years at Spurs, he was like you lot were trying to get him to Arsenal.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, to Man United, and I was sitting there thinking, right, I'm coming up, don't let him go there. But he was, but my relationship, some people you gel with, John Terry was good, but it wasn't as good as with Sol Campbell. I felt like we had a really good partnership, it would be hard
Sol's
to play
got
again.
The pace though, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
That would have been, would that have worried you playing with someone like JT because of the pace?
No, because Nemanja wasn't the quickest. He was quick enough, but Nemanja was just so aggressive on that first ball.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? The ball used to go in and it used to be like, he'd come out and in the end, you build that reputation where people end up don't going near you. They end up playing out wide. How many times have Kevin Davis and people like playing against Pat or playing against you sometimes?
Yeah.
And we used to think like, wow. But that's the reputation being built over time.
And with Sol, though, as well, he is one of those centre-backs that doesn't get mentioned enough. And I think he feels it, doesn't he? When you look at his Instagram stories, he's always...
Is he on Instagram?
He's always putting a little thing.
Yeah, he lets you know now.
Don't forget how quick it was in the second half. There's a little thing of like, he's top speed.
I see that one. The speed was funny, that one. But he was like... Sol was like... He was top, man.
He's tough, yeah. You got in and around him as a forward. You're losing the ball. If his body gets in or close to you, you're not...
He used to have two masseurs on one on each leg.
Wow.
He was massive, wasn't he? Yeah. Two of them just on my leg like that. At the same time.
Did you enjoy your time at England when you look back?
No, I don't know. I think if you ask the players now if they enjoy their time with England, they all go, we can't. You speak to them, Declan, all them boys, I can't wait to get there.
Yeah.
I weren't like that with England. No. I wasn't like chomping at the bit to go away with England. It was, you loved it when you were there and you played the game, but I didn't enjoy totally the environment. It weren't a perfect environment. Even when I first went there, it was really very much like Man United over there, everyone else there.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And then it became a little bit more inclusive after that. Why was that anyway? Because you used to get down early and leave early, and we're all sitting there like on our starters.
I felt like with the Man United guy, because they was all young, it was you and Phil.
It was seven or eight, was we growing up with each other. We just
and Scholes, you know, yeah, it was you lot all together.
We were always early.
People always say this, Liverpool, Man United. It was never that, was it?
No.
It was Man United.
Because they had a lot of the guys in there. I remember 98, wasn't it?
Ego, that's called ego.
I always remember, they get down to dinner early. Yeah. And also, when you're in a dressing room, you're an hour and 15 minutes before the game, the manager gives the team, you start getting dressed. They'd all be dressed in 5 minutes.
And you think, and then when they leave for dinner, we'd say, fucking wank.
But there was a thing. What I'm saying to you is, you talk about the standards of getting ready early, being early, getting on the. We were first on the training pitch. You say we were first in the canteen, by the way. We were first on the training pitch as well, by the way. So it was
stretching.
Being first and getting there and getting it done was really important to us.
Do you think it was difficult to leave your club hat at home? Do you know what I mean? Like, did you come into camp doing Man United stuff? Do you know what I mean?
I remember there were seven or eight of us, Jill, in there. At times there could be me, Beck, Scholesy, Teddy Sheringham, Coley, Nicky Butt,
Phil,
Wes. We could have seven or eight in there, and we were like brothers. We literally
like
grew up with each
club,
other. So you get picked, and you obviously you're knocking each other's door before you go down. You sit together. No one was telling us that it was anything different. Mm. When I look back now, when you think about cohesiveness in a team, you think about the impact that would have had on others. Even though we were young, by the way, we were 22, 23, 24. Yeah. We weren't we weren't the senior players in the dressing room or anything like that.
If you weren't all top players, you'd have been hated. I reckon everyone would have been going, look at them, fuck.
Look at them, yeah.
They'd have been...
That's the main headline.
You can't... When you're like all top players, it's like, especially like Scholesy, everyone's going, fuck, how good's he? You couldn't hate yous because you were that good and you were winning, obviously. It was just like, why are they like that?
But I don't think we were sort of sat there slagging off the other players from the clubs or anything like that. We weren't it was just we sat together. Engage. Yeah.
Remember, we're all intrigued, the class of 92... You know, you're sitting there, and you're all like robots there, you know, just winning machines.
Yeah, but you know what
that's
I
what
think about? Like, we'd done the under-21s together, didn't we, all different people, but I can't remember like Man United players actually under-21s, to be fair.
They
you never really did that, did you?
I played 18 games for United and then played for England.
So you'd never played for England at any level?
I played under 18.
Okay.
We played with Sol.
I think that's where it helps you, doesn't it? You sort of get to know each other.
But that's why this group of players of England now, I think they're so good, because they've all come through.
Yeah.
It was only me, you and Frank that came through together, wasn't it? 21s.
Yeah, but you had Keiran Dyer was there. Different people, wasn't he? Just floating about different clubs.
Roy, what did you think when Rio first came to United?
Obviously, we knew he was going to be a good player. Obviously rumours stuff coming true and we're obviously delighted that he was coming in. Yeah, but again, when you don't know about managers or coaches staff coming in, obviously Rio comes in, the first thing you do as a player, isn't it? You go, let's see what you've got.
Yeah.
That's the first thing I do with any player, and you just hope the player will come in. And from a selfish point of view, you go, let's hope he makes us better. Of course. But then you do the ups and downs like any other player. And you try, hopefully you try and help a player settle in.
Because you came out at a difficult period, didn't you? What year did you arrive at United?
2002, after the World Cup.
So we won the league in 2002.
You hadn't won the league for 2 years.
Then we didn't win the league for 3 years. You won
the league the first year, didn't you?
My first year.
First year won the league.
Huge pressure because you hadn't won the league.
Yeah, but then
you'd won the league.
But you went in for 3 years after that, I don't think. We didn't win it between sort of 2004.
Did you win the league year before
that? Arsenal won it in 2002 and then Man United won it in 2003.
Yeah, but then we didn't win it for 3 years.
So your first year you won the league?
Yeah, my first year we won it. And that was probably the biggest pressure of any of my time at Man United, because I was coming and thinking they were on the back of winning so many things consistently. And I was like, massive money they'd spent on me. And I was like, what? If we don't win it now, everyone's looking at me. It's my fault. That's how I was thinking internally.
We were, yeah.
But it was like, we obviously won the league that year, and it was like a big like relief, to be fair to me, because... But I needed the help. I remember we played against, I think it was Southampton away, we drew. And it was the back end of the season. And in my mind, I was like, fuck, we fucked it. We've blown it. But I remember hearing you two in the shower going, that's a point gain there. Good point. That's all right. Not what we wanted, but it's the point, and that it really helped me change. That's why we talk about United now. Where are those people that the newcomers are looking to get those little nuggets where it helps you stay on track? They're not there.
Mentioning them two in the shower and then little nuggets.
Because you know you got United and everybody, United's got this kind of mystique about it's the United and the winning machine and everything. When did you realise this is the place, bro? This is pressure, this is it, every game? Because what I remember of United is to try and beat them. You know, you feel like unbelievable. And you've come in as a centre-half, it's coming in to solidify everything. When did you realise, Jesus Christ, man, this is the place?
I think just when I walked in the training ground. It weren't a match. Is walking in the training ground and seeing all these guys sitting there. And in my head, I'm just counting how many Premier League titles they've all got. I've got zero next to my name. I'm just thinking, I've got to impress these first. I have to get over that first hurdle, which is these guys. Go out and train well. The most pressure I felt at United, I swear to you, was my first training session.
So who did you replace, Rio? Who would you have come in for? Who was...
Laurent?
Who?
Laurent
Blanc. He was there. I asked for the number five shirt and the gaffer went... Laurent Blonsky, have to wait a year. But Lauren was there, and I kind of come in for him, really. And me and Mikel played for the first season.
Is that right? Mm. Mikel, yeah.
What number was your first season, then?
Six.
And he stayed six?
He stayed six, and then when he left, I went five. But it was the pressure of the players was the biggest thing for me. You want to impress your teammates and show them, justify why they...
That's a lot of money at the time. Yeah.
But you also want to impress a new player coming in as well. Yeah. Rio's coming in, big reputation, big money. You go, you want them to think you're a good player as well. It goes hand in hand.
Yeah, that's what I think that always happened. And the manager was good at that, buying a big player every summer. Yeah. So everyone else goes, I need to show him why I'm here. Really important that was for us.
Why not management? Why punditry?
Personal circumstances. I was doing my badges. I wanted to be a coach, manager, 100%. Me... Wayne, Michael, Shazy, they've all done management now. I was on the same courses as them. Obviously, personal situations at home happen, and it just like, I had to, if you're going to be a manager, you're there like 24-7. There's no time off. I've seen it with Stevie and Frank, the little time I've had with them. Like, the change from being a pundit to being a manager, their phone's never off their ear. They're not really fully engaged because they're probably thinking about a million other things. And my kids needed me to kind of be like 100% with them. Like, I'm at work, but I'm contactable. I can still be there. I can still get to parents' evenings and stuff like that. Where as managers, you know that they miss all that stuff. So I had to make a real quick decision. It wasn't even something I had to think about, really. I'm not doing that. So and punditry, you're still involved. We're all doing it. We're all enjoying it. This is what you'd be talking about with your mates in a pub.
Do you love it, the pundit? I mean, I obviously, this is what we all do. I do. I mean, do you genuinely love it and being at the games and talking about football?
Yeah, I'll be doing this anyway. My pals began to games. Like, loads of my mates come up for the game at the weekend. I'll be on that train or on that minibus with them. But no, I love it. And we get to see it firsthand, and we're still close enough that you get to smell it and feel it a little bit. So I love it. And the week leading up, prepping for the games and stuff, getting that little bits of information that no one's seeing and stuff. And yeah, I love it. And just seeing the way the game's changed.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? And I think I just love it to be a bit more like American sports, though, where the clubs are more open. They want you in there. They understand what the media means and represents, and you're part of the game rather than they treat the media a little bit like the clubs, like you just stay there, just keep you off.
Where do you think it should go to then, sort of punditry? What type of like access should we be allowed, and would you have liked that as a player?
No, I just think maybe loosen up the players. But we weren't like that. We were, if you look back at it in interviews of us, we were a disgrace. Like,
speak for yourself.
No, we were just like one-dimensional. Yeah. Just like, answer the question, bog-standard answer, what everyone you've seen over the years.
Yeah.
But you look at the Americans and that, they're such open books, do you know what I mean? And they're just, they're quite, there aren't many boundaries of them. They say what they feel at the time. I'm not having that. You've said that about me, but I'd like them conversations. Yeah. Like, I've been critical of Harry Maguire in the past in a Man United shirt in England. I've given the praise that he obviously deserves, but in a United shirt, at times I've picked at his game and from a tactical perspective or his individual performance. And I know he's not going to be happy with that because I wouldn't be happy with people looking at my game. But I would love him to go, Rio, what's that about? Like, and have that conversation. Yeah. I know it's difficult because there's a lot of pressure, but I think the clubs shouldn't see us as the enemy. Or, I don't think the enemy is too strong, but as we're not trying to get a story out of them. We want to enhance the game, enhance the product, and I think by getting players to be a bit more human and seeing them a bit stripped back would be really a good job.
I think in the role that we do, if you interview someone and you sort of, I wouldn't say build a relationship or you're seeing things from their point of view, you can't help, but when you're then speaking about them or that team, you just warm to. I don't say you tell lies or say one thing one week and something the next, but you kind of but warm to see and think, oh, I've got a. I want him to do well. Yes. I want that team to do well.
Yeah.
I want
the goodwill.
Yeah. When you know someone a bit better, you do think better of them, don't you? Yeah. But yeah, I don't know. Are we asking too much? I don't know. Like, but the reason that I see it in American sport, where there's a lot more access and there's a lot more kind of understanding of what the media represents and what it means to
them. In America, it's mad, isn't it? They sit with the players who've just come out of the show.
Yeah. Oh, it's unreal.
Yeah.
NFL. The Nuggets.
But really, I agree with you, obviously, but I also then just, you mentioned it, when you step back into our careers, there was a lack of trust.
Yeah, yeah.
And why would these players now not have that same lack of trust for people who are at times criticising them on a weekly basis? Why would they be different than we were?
But I think,
you think about, say, for instance, Match of the Day, someone criticised you, the last thing that I would ever see any of us do is go and sit down with them after and say, let's have a chat about it.
That's,
no, you know what I mean? We wouldn't.
But when we were playing, did we not completely criticise
them? No, we did.
Yeah. We must have done.
But we did, Roy, but we probably wouldn't have then gone and sat with that person for probably half an hour after.
Yeah, I get that, but you also wouldn't have been getting people to ring him up, like your agent, and go, oh, no, hey, you've been a bit harsh on me.
No,
so you've got to get the balance right. Yeah, you've got to take the criticism. Hey, you don't have to be pals with somebody, but like Rio said, and it happens, it's happened to one or two here, when you have been critical of a player, clubs get in touch through the media to get in touch with you to say, hey, you go,
can you ease down?
Or can you go easy, or can you give a lad a bit of praise? And you're like, no, you try and be fair to everybody.
Yeah. But that's social media, isn't it?
And well, I think of course.
In America, do they have a bit of a positive spin? Like, if you say something, they always focus on the negative, don't they, sometimes? So players then aren't as open in the interviews. But I think in America, they do seem really positive. Like,
but their media over there is, they're on it. And they've got more time, airtime as well.
Yeah.
And they are drilling down on everything on these players, like, more than what we do.
Are you still tweeting, Rio?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You weren't happy with that at the time, was you?
Which one?
When we first started.
No.
In the change room.
Yeah, I always remember he was the first person I ever knew on Twitter, right? So we came in. I think I was just about to retire. I always remember the gaffer going, fucking twat!
Yeah.
Twat! I couldn't say the double T. Twat! Fucking twat! And I remember saying,
that's what the dressing room was changing.
But we were like, we were all like, Twitter, why would I even think, what are you doing?
Yeah.
It was like madness. Yeah. You were the first person on it. You were the actual advocate of it at the time. Said, this is the new way. This is the way in which to sort of, if you like, communicate moving forward.
Yeah, but that was the downside of the dressing rooms. You go back to, again, when we played, it sounds like it was 100 years ago, and I kind of had it. I remember not long before I left United, I kind of had a chat with some of the players where, no problem, players going on Twitter, but it was when they were coming in after training, where this idea of, I always thought was really important in the dressing room, where lads would have some sort of conversation. Mm. But it was, the phones were ticking.
I remember that meeting. Fletch.
Yeah. Lads were playing games. It was the right message to the wrong guy.
Fletch.
He was on his
phone.
On his phone.
On
his PSP.
Was it like a? No, it's on his phone.
What did you do?
Do you remember?
What did you do?
What happened, Roy?
No, I was trying to make the point about
And I think the team were having a difficult spell. We hadn't won in a week.
I was trying to make the point to the players, don't forget what it's about. And that would just, again, sometimes you get it right, the timing or whatever. I thought I was trying to do the right thing. And a lot of players at the time, it was certainly going through a phase where a lot of players were on their phones in the dressing rooms. I think, was this Fletcher's phone rang when I was chatting? Was that what happened?
No, you walked in and he was on his phone.
On his phone, right, well, yeah, well, there you go.
And it switched you and you just, then you was went.
That, oh, you went. You
I
went.
Didn't go, lad. Oh,
no, fucking no, you did.
He was 18 as well, it's unbelievable. Oh. He was devastated.
No, but you're, obviously you're trying to help a player, and you're on about Fletch and setting examples, so I've got a young player in the dressing room, Fletch. I've got loads of things for Fletch. Jesus Christ, no problem. But you're trying to put a marker down and go, you're in the dressing room. There's a, you know what I mean?
You saw it early, Ron. You saw it early.
You got it wrong, like.
With that?
No, not that one, but at times at United.
Absolutely,
with,
of course.
With brilliant players.
Of course. But I think most times I got it wrong.
Admit to it.
No, of course. But that's the whole point. If you keep, like, we heard it earlier, when you're trying to set examples, or when Stuart Pearce was setting examples for me, yeah, sometimes you think they've got it wrong, but the older you get, you go, maybe. Yeah.
Do you remember Michael Stewart?
Yeah, Michael Stewart.
Do you remember that one?
Yeah. What was that one? What, with me with Michael?
Yeah, do you remember? It was, you remember you sit on the ledge and do your leg swings before you go out to training.
Yeah, right.
And This is a young lad, Scottish international, played every level.
But he wasn't that quiet. He was mad for the table tennis, remember? Yeah, but you're making all these guys.
No. I'm not saying he was like a timid kid. He was like quite open. He's actually quite an open speaking guy now. But
he is, absolutely.
He was there. I don't know what triggered you, but I remember hearing you say to him, like, I could just came down the corridor and I could hear you going, you'll never make it, you. You'll never make it. You'll be playing for a pub team, the Swan or something like that, in a couple of years, you carry on the way you are.
I was right. He ended up at Hibs. Hibs and hats, that's what he played
Confidence
for.
Confidence was on the floor.
Right, no. But I was trying to motivate him.
We started
and he beat me at the table tennis. He was mad for the table tennis.
That's what Man United... Yeah, but we started... when we started talking about United needing that. They need that, whether you're right or wrong. You do need that. And obviously, you've seen where it is in United's dressing room now. You've got, like we were talking about, a player. And like he seems to be, like York, very worried about him. He needs that.
Yeah.
Then he's that in the dressing room.
It reminds me, Rio, you made the point, it reminds me of the stuff at United. I know we keep going about you. But the great thing at United at the time, you remember coming in and table tennis, everyone was competing. Wasn't it?
Oh, man.
There was a competition. So if you were injured, you come back from injury, you'd play a hockey or table tennis. Remember, lads would be fighting over the table tennis. Like, you were having a table tennis before training. Lads would be fighting. Michael used to throw bats at me all the time. I'm telling you. I was having table tennis before training, but it was that. It was that environment, and then five-a-sides or the boxes, you were on edge all the time.
Yeah.
And that's what I think certainly you worry, have these clubs, have United got that at the moment?
No.
Because they're turning up for games, and afterwards you're going, did they seem up for it? Did they have the... Like, when you sit there and talk about a team going, whatever about tactics and players having bad games, but you look and go, they didn't look up for it. They didn't look... They've not turned up. They didn't have the energy. You go, you're in trouble. You're in trouble if you're not on the edge all the time.
Imagine losing a game in training. Remember that used to be like losing a game in training.
It'd
just be absolutely honestly. Like your day's done. It's finished.
Absolutely.
Just ribbing all day long.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean?
Jesus.
The arguments over five aside. Oh.
I used to think players got more wound up in them five aside than they did in the actual game.
I tell you who the worst one ever is, Farrah Williams.
Farrah, yeah.
The worst one ever.
We used to play Young the Old on a Friday, remember? I know. Go back to the old days. They'd be kicking. Look, the game's the next day. We'd have the benches. Fabian be up front and we'd be kicking. The game's tomorrow. Yeah. Fabian's a striker. Yeah. He's actually a better striker than a goalkeeper. No.
But you needed that though. Like, I thought it was always that. Like, if the training was off on a Friday, they weren't that zip in the training and that grit in the training on Friday. You used to think going into the game, we're going to be at it.
Let's finish on the golden generation.
Wow.
Why do you look at me? I'm Irish.
They were
golden.
I don't
care what it's called in generation.
A team that was... it was Jamie in net, Ashley Cole, you, pick any other partner, Sol Campbell, John Terry. I was right back. Cara was in the squad. Bex.
You were skiing.
Stevie.
Bex, Stevie, Frank, Scholesy.
Could have been Rooney
and Owen.
Well.
Rooney and Owen.
Okay, what team?
Do you think we got the match? Do you think it was a case of other teams were better, or do you think it was a case of that we didn't deliver what we should have done?
Brazil were better than us. You go through Brazil's team, name their team, when they beat us in that in the World Cup. Their front three was Ronaldinho, Rivaldo, Ronaldo. Cafu and Roberto Carlos, fullbacks. They were Gilberto midfield. They were unbelievable team. We were kind of, it almost tarnished us, that name. Do you know what I mean? It brought a bit of pressure. Expectations were probably a bit higher. France's team then was a good team, top team. Do you know what I mean? So we were the golden generation. We had some really, really good individuals, top individuals. But I don't think we probably reached our potential because of the way we were put together as
a
team.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the only real negative I see about that team. It's all almost like, what could we have been if we were actually put into a formation that actually benefited or that made them players play the best they can? Like you say, rigid 4-4-2. Mm. Like, and you've got other teams bringing players into midfield, Rivaldo dropping in with Ronaldo and wondering why we can't get close to him.
But if you were turning up, Rio, you know, we've had this chat with lads who've played for England before, and a lot of them say a bit like you, did you look forward to going? There was a bit an element of, I'm not saying you didn't enjoy the games or the challenge, and you're on about the 6-7 United lads sitting together, I know maybe a couple of years later. Did that certainly not help the group in terms of getting over the line in them tight games?
Maybe, yeah.
I've heard so many England players say they didn't look forward to going away playing for their country.
You know, even though you name that Brazilian side and they were amazing, and you look at our side, I still believe that with the right manager, I don't know, probably with a Glenn Hoddle, with the way that Glenn Hoddle could move things around and change the formation and that, I think that I would, if you're going to put a team up against that Brazil side, it would be that with someone like Glenn Hoddle at the helm. Because I think that as good as that team was, we had, I'd probably say, I don't want to say dig J-Mo out, but that's probably the goalkeeper would have been probably the weakest part of our team there when you look at what we had from front, midfield and back. I think that we probably, if we had the right manager, that team does something. Because it's not the golden generation for not. We had everything in those teams.
I think Glenn Hoddle, like you just mentioned him, I think it's a really good point. I think him going was probably the biggest reason we didn't go on to
kick on.
Yeah, because you remember when we was in
tactically,
the squad with
him, he would have done it, I think.
He was unreal. He had us playing three at the back, rotations from back to front. It was like
telling
people
you.
Rolling inside the pitch. It was crazy. Wing back, and at the McManaman playing for, or Becks at times playing out wide.
Yep.
Not defensive players on the flanks. He was just he just saw the game in a different way. And at that time, obviously, what happened with him, he leaves. Yeah. But I think we lost so much kind of forward thinking.
Yeah, we missed one there, Glenn.
And finally, on Sunday, Liverpool come to Manchester United. The moment where you score.
Yeah.
Nice goal as well, Reid. It's a good goal.
Got another badger kiss.
He kissed it.
Oh, was it you?
What do you think?
What's the score?
Yeah.
What's the game? What's the game look like to you?
The problem with United, I don't know about you, you don't know what's going to turn up. Like, even the other day when they beat Liverpool the other day, I think Liverpool lost that game.
The cup game.
Yeah. So, I think Liverpool have got a bit between their teeth, and there's a consistency with the way they're playing that makes them favourites, I think, even at Old Trafford at the moment. But I'm going to go for a draw. I'm going to go for a 1-1.
I'm really intrigued by it because I think Liverpool probably don't have to win the game, but they can't lose that game.
I think they have to win.
I think they have to win?
I don't think on this title running, when you've got these three teams going for it, you can think that you can afford to just have a draw.
It's an away game.
I keep saying that.
I know, but you look at every game going, they can't lose that game.
I think this weekend is really one of the biggest weekends of the running. I think all three teams are away. I think Man City go to Palace in the early kickoff, which you know won't be easy. 12:30 kickoff. Arsenal go to
Brighton.
They were at Anfield last week. You know, won't be an easy game. So I think if one of them sort of drop points in, the other two win, I think it'll feel big sort of oomph. And I think if Liverpool win at Old Trafford, I know Man United are in great form, but it's you always say about when you were going for a title. You felt like if you won at Anfield,
I think there
is that little bit of freedom at Liverpool. If they go to Old Trafford and win,
you're in the group.
It's a big.
If they don't, Jamie, will you be around? Will we see it?
I'm the next 2 weeks.
Do you think? Sorry, before you finish, yeah. do you think football now is better than when we played?
They're all going to say no.
I think they're fitter and technically and tactically better. Yeah. Whether it's more exciting to watch the odd game, but I think that was a disappointment last week, the City-Arsenal game. But generally, I think tactically, physically, technically, the game is a lot better.
I'd like to see more 50-50.
The worst thing about COVID was watching your own games back, weren't it?
You did that in COVID.
No, but all the old games were on the TV, weren't they? You look around, you think about what certain teams were like and what games were like, and it's just like... Everyone's just kicking it long and tackling.
Yeah.
But would you change it? I wouldn't change it.
I like that.
I actually think the Premier League this year has been one of the best. I mean, the goals in the league this season is off the... You can say something about the defending, but yeah. I think some of the games this season have been unbelievable.
Yeah.
Rio, brilliant speech. Cheers, thank you. Yeah. Nice brilliant. Thank
Cheers.
You. Thank you.
Yes, I love you, Rio. Nice one. It's scared to say, can you excuse us while we do Super 6?
Oh, sorry, go on, I'll sit in the stands.
He's scared of you.
It's because of your sponsors.
Go on.
Respectful, isn't it? Yeah, all right, we'll do Super 6 quickly.
And see you quickly.
Great, OK, last week's scores. Gary, you got 11.
Yes.
Because great. Of me.
Top 20%.
Top 20%.
Gary and Jill.
Gary and Jill.
Well, good point, actually.
I'm not on this podcast.
Brady, we had a nightmare.
Fantastic.
Right, I'm a boy.
Yeah, my point. Four.
It was the international break. He'd been travelling. We were out of sorts.
Yeah, we were out of sorts.
Oh, the fact you didn't have me.
Yeah. Where were you writing?
What day was it?
4 points.
I can't even remember.
You haven't got an excuse?
I have got an excuse.
Well, you were abroad.
The international break.
You're on holiday?
Yeah, I was abroad.
Whereabouts?
I can't remember.
We won't concentrate.
I can't remember. See, I'm not even concentrating
now. This week's score. This week's game. Gary, you go first.
Yeah.
Right, I'm going for it this time.
Concentrate.
Am I with you, or you?
You're with us.
2-1. You need us.
Yeah. 2-1.
Brentford's
my team.
Yeah.
Brentford had so many chances
against
United.
Yeah, everyone has chances against United.
Oh, Villa, you always get Villa right, Joe.
106 chances in 3 games.
Brentford had a lot of chances against United.
Oh, that's their home. They're much stronger at home. Villa, very good at home. It's got to be Villa, hasn't it?
Do you think?
Ollie Watkins playing?
Yeah, but he's missing.
Right, what does your heart say?
Brentford.
To win?
You're in one of these little silly moods, aren't you?
We're getting to that stage of the season where you have got to really catch you. You've got to do some
I don't mind that, but we don't have to do it on this game.
So you think that Villa will beat Brentford?
I think, 2-2. You think Brentford would beat Villa?
I'm trying to get points here, Jill. I'm not sitting on the fence. I'm feeling like
Brentford
can do
it. You know Roy's going to just take charge anyway.
No, I'm going to... No, come on.
What do you think? Go on.
I think Villa will beat them.
2-0.
I'll give
Brentford a goal. I was... we could stick with 2-1, but then we're not going to catch up with them.
No. Yeah.
But there's no point in going... We got 3-1, so we take the gamble, will we? Okay. Just to...
He loves a tree.
Who's first on the Fulham one?
Fulham are winning this all day. They're on the back of a shocker against Forest. Do you agree? No.
I think Fulham will win.
I'm going to say
Newcastle got big injuries.
It's our goal. I think Fulham will win.
I'll go Fulham as well.
Go on, you go to score then.
1-0.
3-2.
Wow.
I've gone big.
What, he's gone 3-2.
I'm just saying that. It's half a conjecture.
That was a definite 3-2. That wasn't like a... Is it 3-2 or sort of like a...
That was
a 3-2.
Imagine not doing 3-2 now and it ends up 3-2.
Let's just 2-1.
The indecision on your side is embarrassing.
2-0, but put it in.
2-0 Fulham, yeah?
Of course.
Okay, you're an indecisive unit.
I'm not, but now, you see that? I would have went 3-2. I would have went 3-2.
We need a weird win.
I really hope that you lot went 3-2.
There's not mini rolls. Where's the chocolate?
We need a weird win here.
Okay.
It's your goal.
Can we get mini rolls?
God. Wolves, West Ham, honestly.
1-1 written all over.
Yeah, we'll go 1-1.
1-1,
1-1.
A West Ham win.
West Ham, yeah, Jared Bowen away from home.
I've got no strong feeling about these games.
2-1 yeah. West Ham.
Yeah, I'm agreeing.
What do you think, Roy? Hey. Say something.
No, okay, I'll go with it.
I'm going to go 2-1 West
Ham. Yeah.
But hang on a minute. Why am I saying that? Did you see the chances they missed?
Lads are bored now. Are you getting bored of this?
No, I mean, this...
Maybe
they've worked on
finishing.
Honestly,
I think 2-1. Go on. 2-1 West Ham.
What you said, yeah.
2-1.
Yeah.
2-1 West Ham. Right. Don't put people under pressure, Gal, just because you know what you want to do. I don't like the way you're moving right now, bro. You're not moving right.
Do you think?
2-0.
You think 2-0 clean sheet?
Yeah.
You think?
No one can get at them, can they?
They defended very well at the
weekend. Yeah, I'll go with that. Yeah, 2-0. 2-0. Yeah, I'm up with that.
I think we'll get a goal.
If we can hold out City, we can hold out.
Arsenal will get a few. Game.
You prefer our scores to yours, that's the problem.
We haven't got a draw yet.
Jump ship.
We haven't even got a draw yet, that's our problem.
You ain't going to draw there, though, you're not going to Arsenal, Brighton.
It's over then, if you draw there, it's over.
No, they'd beat Luton, then they'd be happy, they'll take the draw down there.
We'll go, you know, 2-0's a good score.
They can't draw there.
He thinks it'll be a goal.
I don't think
so. They're going to win every single game. Is that what
that's not the game they can draw. I mean, you maybe
right away.
I don't think that's the game they can drop points in.
3-1.
They need them in the bank when they go to Old Trafford
you
and see.
I think Arsenal will get some.
2 or 3-1 Arsenal. Yeah.
Is this Liverpool's
two or
toughest
three
game
one,
left?
3-1. Go 3-1.
Would you say
3-1 then?
3-1 Arsenal.
Yeah.
Although to be fair,
I'm not happy.
I know.
This is going to be big. I think. Like
is this 2-1 Liverpool.
Yeah, we've got 2-1
we won't
Liverpool.
Be on the same page here. Yeah.
2-1
Liverpool.
Liverpool
to win, yeah.
Liverpool to win.
Do you think it'll be bigger than that?
I can't see it.
Man United against Brentford the other day.
I do actually think that'll be the score.
I think it'll be a draw.
Don't copy us.
I think it'll be a draw.
Yeah, what? They're capable of copying us.
I go 1-1.
1-1 in that game? Yeah, we'll have to win it.
I know they do.
That's not a game to drop points, Gary. Not that one.
You know what? Chelsea, to be honest, it's a game that Liverpool mustn't lose.
Oh, say Chelsea win that yet now?
It's against the United side.
£1 billion bottle jobs. Will they go to Sheffield United?
You know something?
Stop using these inflammatory quotes.
Do you regret that, or...?
No.
No, it's a good quote.
In a moment in time.
Every time you use it, it's a
TV. It's like you say something, you don't expect it to get the traction it gets, you know what I mean?
Well...
It doesn't do you any harm,
though,
does it?
Has Pep come back at you?
I'd hope so.
Of course he did.
That doesn't mean Pep's right.
I know.
I didn't think he was right, but I was wondering if he'd like.
I've watched Man City for the last 10 years. I don't think I've ever criticised him once.
Yeah.
Or any of the players. And then they all get a bit upset.
Yeah. A
bit delicate, aren't they?
Yeah. What's the score?
Did we get criticised when we were players?
Big.
What did we do?
Got on with it, right?
Yeah.
We got on with it.
It's social media, that's why. Do you think these will get a lot?
We got.
It's your go.
It's your go. Your first.
We go.
Thank you very much.
Oh, brilliant.
Chelsea.
Thank you.
Three one Chelsea.
Oh, I was going to say that.
I was going to say 3-0.
It's getting to that point whereby
Chelsea can see.
Start bringing. That's 22-point lead.
22-point lead.
We've done 3-2-1s.
We just.
Great. Thank you. That's super six.
Well, Ben.
Well done, Ben.
I think one of them will be a 0-0. I know it's gone now.
Well, your body language suggests a name, not in it.
You have to do sideways, Roy, so you can get in like that. Don't squeeze up on me like that.
He's rubbing his toes on you.
He's rubbing himself on me. He done it on purpose as well. It's really,
brilliant,
it's
everyone.
Really weird.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.